Blog Talk Radio.
Second down, 30, going deep. And he's got his receiver, Adams! Slicing in for the touchdown.
The Pulse of the Pack Podcast.
Play in big running room.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to Pulse of the Pack Podcast. It is Sunday. We are 3 days removed from the Packers and Eagles game, and you are getting my voice. I am Jason Perrone of Cheesehead TV, because our usual host, Jacob Westendorf, is trying desperately to call into the show. So while we wait for Jacob to call in, we'll go ahead and jump in and get started with our content of the day. So once Jake joins us, we have an announcement to make about the show and how it's going to come to you in the near future, which we're very excited about. And we're going to probably spend a little bit more time in this show talking about the upcoming game with the Dallas Cowboys, which, as we record this show right now, are about to finish up the first half with their Sunday night game against the New Orleans Saints. And currently the Saints are up 6-3. It's been a defensive battle, not a lot of points scored despite the two running games, but it's a good look at the Dallas Cowboys as it relates to the team that the Packers are going to face in 1 week. So 1 week's time, they've got to get healthy and or healthier and head to Dallas and try to get a big win on the road and make up for an unfortunate loss to the Eagles. So I guess we'll start in order here. So thinking back to that Eagles game, it was a clunker by the defense. The defense just simply could not get anything going. They couldn't get a pass rush. Philadelphia came in with a good game plan of getting the ball out of Carson Wentz's hands fast. He's a big guy. He's elusive. He's more athletic. And I think we got a good look at the Packers against a better offense than they had seen the first 3 weeks of the season. So, earlier today, the Chicago Bears and Minnesota Vikings faced off against each other, two teams that the Packers have already faced and beaten this season, and it really wasn't anything spectacular offensively from either team, but more surprising than anything was the fact that Minnesota just could not muster anything at all. Kirk Cousins struggled to hit the deep ball. The Vikings really couldn't run the ball as effectively. Chicago's defense was very stingy. And that's a problem, obviously, in the NFL. In this day and age, you know, it used to be if you got 100 yards or 150 yards rushing, you could pretty much chalk up a victory. But that's just not the case anymore in today's NFL. So now you've got a situation where you've got to be able to throw. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Packers were successful in still beating the Denver Broncos last week. And that being because they gave up a lot of yards on the ground to Philip Lindsay, but they stiffened up and tightened up when it mattered, which was in the passing game and definitely in the red zone and in that, you know, in that down or goal to go type of situation. They just unfortunately were not able to do that against the Eagles. It came down to a close game late. The Packers had two first and goal situations in the second half that both resulted in 0 points. The last one, the interception, unfortunately, that bounced right off of Marquez Valdez-Scantling's jersey was a situation where they probably were dealing with some pass interference. According to a still shot that you see of the play, before the ball gets there, neither of MBS's arms are available to him because they are locked behind his back by the defender, who got there rather early and prevented him from making the catch. So it resulted in a turnover. Now, it was inside of 2 minutes, and all turnovers are reviewed by the league anyway. So one thing that you would hope would also get reviewed was their pass interference on the play. The 2 weeks prior, when the Packers faced the Minnesota Vikings, there was a touchdown play. The Minnesota Vikings score a touchdown. The league reviews it, and they determine that, although it looked like a valid touchdown, they were determined that there was offensive pass interference, and they called that, even though that was not the call on the field. So the replay officials do have the ability to make that call if they deem it necessary. So unfortunately, that just wasn't the case. The officiating has been very inconsistent. I don't have any numbers or stats yet on whether or not that's an anomaly or something that has been more prevalent this season than in any other season. But it's certainly been a source of frustration at times when you've got egregious plays that are not being called. And when they're not being called, unfortunately, depending on how it is or is not called on the season, then, you know, you may or may not be able to challenge it. You may or may not be able to throw the red flag. So that's troublesome there. And I know that Matt LaFleur has tried to challenge plays as much as he can. And in spots where he thinks he can win a challenge, there was one that he challenged this past week against the Eagles that looked like pass interference that was not overturned. It was not called on the field, and it was not overturned in the replay. It's your best guess. Your guess is as good as mine in terms of whether or not it was worth it to whether it was worth it to even implement that rule. So, it's one of those things that's just we're gonna ride out the season. It's not going away before the end of the year, and we'll have to see what comes of it. So, not blaming the officials there. The Packers just didn't make enough plays. You know, again, their defense didn't stiffen up. They didn't have the pressure, and it just unfortunately wasn't. It just wasn't meant to be. So. I still have no Jake on our end here, so it is still me, and he is not even in the studio, so it's not a mute issue because he's not even in the studio. So, but let's see if we can try to get him in another way here. We'll see. All right. Via Google Hangouts, we have Jake Westendorf. Jake, I don't see you in the studio, so let's try to get you on at least via this medium here. I've been yip-yapping about the Eagles game, the officiating, challenges, two first and goals that didn't happen, and any other announcements that you might want to make. I have not made the announcement. I only just teased it a little bit.
Yeah, so for those of you guys that can hear me, I know this is going to be difficult, and for that I apologize, but Jason, for some reason, my phone, Frankie's phone, will not dial in to the number that we typically use for this. So I don't know if it's a Verizon thing. I don't know if it's – but, I mean, I tried to call Frankie from the phone, and it worked just fine. So I'm not sure what the deal is, but I'm here, and we're going to make the most of what we have here. So it may not be the greatest, but it is further proof from what I said last week, and that is that Blog Talk Radio is absolute trash. And the reason for that, or that is the reason for kind of what we're planning on doing here. We are rebranding a little bit. So those of you guys that are fans of the show, we're not going anywhere. There is no plans to discontinue at this point in time, or anytime soon for that matter. So those of you that are fans of the show, we'll still be here, but we're changing our format a little bit. We're going to go with there'll still be podcasts. We're kind of slowly figuring out all the technology and how it all works. So it might be a little clunky for a little bit, but those of you that listen to the show know that that's not any different than what we're doing right now as we're recording on speakerphone basically into Jason's home. So there's some stuff going on. We're going to go the YouTube route, and what we're going to do is we're going to talk with a lot of people around. The main idea here will still be the show between Jason and myself. But we're adding some stuff to it as ways that we think will make the show stand out a little bit. So some guys we're bringing aboard on our team. Jeremy Vanderlinden will be involved. He's had TV Live to some degree. How much is kind of up to him. There is Tyler Grzegorik will be doing some fantasy football stuff for us, and we're determining when those segments will be because we don't want it all to be on the same show. And then Matt Bogue, Team Degenerate, is going to be on the show to discuss gambling for those of you that are of the gambling type. So we'll have the YouTube channel. We'll send the link out for you once we have everything going. But this, hopefully, this will be a last resort of us using this platform, the podcast, and hopefully this is the end of Blog Talk Radio and usage of that platform for this show, because frankly, we want to be better for our listeners. We think that this is the best way to do it, and it gives you a chance to have some video and see our faces if you really are into that sort of thing, I guess. But that's how we're going to do things moving forward, and we'll have more information for you guys as we get it. But that is the plan for right now, and I think it's exciting. I think it's going to be a good change for us. So that's the plan moving forward. We'll get a link and everything to you guys. Follow our official Twitter account at Packer Pulse. That'll have everything for you. All those guys will be involved with it. We're going to have a lot of different stuff. So more content for you guys in that regard. Let's talk about Thursday's game. The Packers are now 3-1 after a tough loss to the Philadelphia Eagles on Thursday Night Football at Lambeau Field. Their first loss in the era of Matt LaFleur. And, I mean, no loss is a fun one. There's no losses that are good ones. But at the same time, I think there were some things that were encouraging. Aaron Rodgers threw for 422 yards. He had two touchdown passes. He threw an interception at the end of the game, it really stunk. Frankly, it should have been called pass interference, but it wasn't. This is where we're at now, where pass interference is reviewable. It wasn't even reviewed, and that's the frustration I have. I would have been okay with a no call if there were no penalties. My only question, Jason, I'm not sure what you said in your little diatribe there, but my question on this is, if you're going to review pass interference, if you're going to make that reviewable, what is the point of making it reviewable if you're not going to review it on the biggest play of the game, one, two, and if you're not going to get the damn calls right? There's two plays, one of each, one on each side, so I'm not even saying this is just a Packers thing. Very easily they could have called pass interference on Kevin King late in the third quarter there, but definitely should have called pass interference. The league has a graphic that looks exactly like the play to Marquez Valdes-Scantling as a way to say this is what pass interference looks like, and they still said no call. Matt LaFleur challenged it and lost. Frankly, I think that coaches should stop challenging pass interference because I have yet to see a coach win one. And I could be wrong on that, but I have yet to see a coach win one. So, Jason, what are your thoughts on that as the officiating as a whole, I guess, and the pass interference review?
So this was something that I did kind of talk about a little bit to start the show before you came on, and I talked about that very thing. And it's like, yeah, if you've got the technology, you have to get it right. But it doesn't do any good to anybody if you determine after the fact that you biffed it, you got the call wrong, and you apologize. What does that do? It doesn't help put a win back in the win column. So that's exactly what I said. Now, one of the issues that I had there, Jake, and on that one at the end of the game, that's not a coach's challenge situation because it's inside of 2 minutes. But we saw them take a touchdown off the board from the Vikings on an OPI that wasn't even called on the field after they reviewed the touchdown. So if they're going to do that and that's possible and it's part of the rule, how on earth do you miss the call against Marquez Valdes-Scantling? Now, it doesn't mean the Packers would have won the game or tied it. They might have thrown another interception or not gotten in on the next try. But at that point, it's first down. You know, you've got four more chances to try to get the ball in. And I would like to think, even though the Packers struggled and reverted back to teams of the past, that they would have gotten in one way or the other. The other thing, too, that, you know, I may be jumping a little bit ahead of myself here because you might have more to say about the officiating. And, I used to be a big blame the refs guy. It used to be so frustrating. Anymore now, we are kind of, you know, it's our own fault if we don't accept what the NFL is, which is an inconsistent entity that just doesn't want to really solve the issue. They don't want to get it right every time. They're okay getting it wrong sometimes and saying, you know what, that's the nature of the beast. And before replay existed, you were at the mercy of whatever was called on the field. So There's all kinds of different justifications you can make for why it's okay that they miss calls here and there. And it is sports. You know, Jake, you've umpired baseball. You've been in that seat before. It happens. You know, things happen fast, all that kind of stuff. I get it. You know, but the bigger issue there is that they couldn't get in. You know, it was like I said, it was the reverting back. You got four chances. There were runs called. Okay, I wasn't in the huddle. I don't know what the actual play calls were. I don't know if it was, you know, what was it, spider two, Y banana? Yeah, all that. I don't know what the actual play call was, but I can tell you right now, we do not have a Matt LaFleur problem. There is no play calling controversy. There is no rift between Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur about play calling. Matt LaFleur sends in the call. There's probably options for Rodgers. And frankly, Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback. When he's at the line of scrimmage, if he sees something, he's got 15 years worth of pretty good experience, in my opinion, to make a call if he feels like it needs to be made. Yep, he's not going to get it right all the time. But you know what? Tom Brady doesn't get it right all the time. Bill Belichick doesn't get it right all the time. It happens. And you know what? There's 11 guys on the Philadelphia side that are getting paid to stop Green Bay from succeeding. So a lot of things going on there, but I'm here to tell you right now, there were runs called on both of those series. They just did not run that play because that's not what the defense was giving them in the eyes of the person who ran the play, which is conceivably Aaron Rodgers. You know, maybe it wasn't, but I have to think that he's the quarterback. It probably was. So, you know, that's another thing you can point to and say, look, if you fix a couple of those pass failings in the game, and if you don't give up a 66-yard return and Mason Crosby doesn't kick the ball out of bounds, and you don't give Philadelphia four or five really short fields where they're starting at the 40 or the 50-yard line, you know, those are the types of things that you can do to help yourself win a game. But the officiating, just the frustrating fallout of that whole thing, and the fact that the league doesn't want to get it right, Jake, it's my old standby of, you know, do I even want Green Bay to get in the playoffs only to have our hopes dashed by a terrible call or no call in the end because the NFL is just going to decide not to get it right? And I, you know, everyone's convenient point to is the NFC Championship game last year, but we've already had enough heartbreak in the playoffs with as Packers fans. I don't know that I want to add another one to the list.
Yeah, I think I've talked about this before. You have often said when they announced that they were going to make pass interference reviewable, I've said that I believe they want perfection in games that are imperfect, and I don't think it's possible to get every call right. The way that I've heard this explained is, you know, if you frame blank everything, anything can look like pass interference. It looks like at this point, me at least, the officials, the only calls, and now granted, I've only watched so many games this year and so many minutes of so many games, but what I have noticed, the only calls the officials are changing are ones that they go under the hood and review themselves. But actual challenges, I haven't seen a challenge won for pass interference versus non-pass interference yet. So I could be forgetting something. I certainly say that's possible. I don't know the exact data on that, but frankly, it's asinine. And I think that the NFL has only opened itself up to more things like this. Because, for example, if pass interference isn't reviewable and they don't call those calls that they didn't make the other night, I don't think it's still a conversation, but it's not as big of a conversation as it's become in the last couple days. But I don't want to get in too much on the officials. I'm not in the mood for drama, Jason. That actually worked out kind of nicely. But Mike McCarthy's spirit lives on in this podcast, I suppose. So that being said, you mentioned it, Jason. The Packers have several reasons to look in the mirror for why they lost on Thursday night. But let's start with the positive because we're rays of sunshine on this podcast. And I think the first thing that's going to stick out to a lot of people is the offense finally carried its weight. Aaron Rodgers said that, you know, the offense was finally going to have to do something sometime. The defense wasn't going to shut everybody down, and they certainly didn't. And we'll get to them in a minute. But the passing game finally came to life a little bit. They still struggled to run the ball, but the passing game did come to life. The only complaint that I have from the offense was the first two series of the second half where Matt LaFleur decided to try and establish their running game. And frankly, I think that was banging your head into a brick wall. Going into this game, we knew what the matchup was. The matchup was Packers passing game versus bad Eagles secondary. In the first half, I mean, Aaron Jones was averaging less than 2 yards a carry at one point during that game. And I think that's one of those games where you just got to say, forget it, whatever my philosophy is. Our running game now, Andy Reid used to always say that, you know, short passes are an extension of the running game. That's the kind of game that needed to be played on Thursday night. And to Matt LaFleur's credit, something you want to see from a head coach is he able to adjust to what's happening on the field? I think he did. I think that's when he said, okay, we're not going to be able to run it tonight. We're going to put the ball in the hands of our two-time MVP quarterback. They weren't able to execute on a lot of those things, but that's the biggest reason I think they lost, was that lack of execution towards the end of the game. Jason, you mentioned the goal line sequencing. If Jimmy Graham – well, first of all, anytime you run a goal line fade, that's a bad one. Don't do that ever. But other than that, poor execution, play action fake, gets snuffed out by the Eagles defense, and they have to throw it into the ground. A RPO that Rodgers keeps and tries to throw on, Jimmy Graham and Alan Lazard both stand there flat-footed. That doesn't really help out your quarterback a whole lot. And then fourth down, they throw a nice play to Jimmy Graham, and he's unable to bring it in. That's execution issues. That's not play calling issues. I think it's very easy to blame plays that are called, but without any substance to it. It's very simple to say, oh, just run it. And, you know, the percentage is this for around the NFL versus, I think somebody said the percentage of runs that are successful is 57% versus 45% passes, which is fine. But that's also not specific to the Packers. Now, would I have preferred them to have one more running play in there? Sure. But I also think that those same people, if the Packers had run it twice and thrown it twice and failed altogether and not scored, they would have said, how do you only let the MVP, two-time MVP quarterback throw the ball twice? Ultimately, that's what I've learned with, I think, what's affectionately referred to as play calling guy, is they're never happy. If it doesn't work, those are the plays they want. They want the plays that work. It doesn't always work out that way. But I got long-winded there. But, Jason, what I was getting at was 420 yards passing. It was a good mix, I thought, of throwing on time and improvising, making some plays out of the pocket, taking off and running a little bit for the quarterback as well. Are you encouraged, at least by the passing inch performance, that, hey, if this defense can't shut the other team down, this offense can still run score for score with a high-powered offense?
Yeah, I mean – I would have to say so. Aaron Rodgers was elusive enough, and he didn't get, you know, he only got sacked one time. Unfortunately, it was a strip sack, and they lost the football when it happened. But he was able to get out of it, able to kind of sneak around and run around better. And that's the kind of running that I'm okay with Aaron Rodgers doing. His happy feet in the pocket and not setting his feet and looking for something more downfield when there isn't really anything to be had there is a totally different story. That's a different thing. But, yeah, I mean, the offense, it was something to build on. You know, the running game wasn't going to happen because Philly was second best in stopping the run, and the Packers still, you know, insisted on trying to run it and cram it down their throat, and it just wasn't working very well, which is why everybody, you know, it's funny. Everybody says try a run in the goal line, you know, first and goal at the one, but it's like had they tried three runs and not gotten in and kicked a field goal, everybody is screaming about why you didn't put the ball in the hands of your best player. You're future Hall of Fame, generational talent quarterback. And so there's your play calling guy right there too. So you can't please everybody, but yeah, I think the offense has got something to build on there. Now, will they have Devontae Adams? Is he going to miss a couple games with the turf toe injury? I'm not sure. The good news was it doesn't need surgery. So hopefully he'll be back sooner than later. But if he can't go next week at Dallas, that's a big loss in a game that the Packers really, you know, be nice if they could steal it and win it somehow, because they're not going to be favored. I say steal it because they're not going to be favored to win. And with the loss to the Eagles, now you don't want too many NFC losses. So it's one that they have to try to find a way to win, but you may not have Devontae Adams. You may also be without Brian Bulaga, who had a shoulder injury and didn't come back in that game either. So for Tay Adams not to be out there on a very vital series where you need points to tie a game to potentially stay in it or try to win it means it was bad. So, you know, it's injuries. Every team deals with them, but it's just a tough time for them to do that, to have that happen. And then it's something that's probably going to affect the offense as well. So don't expect them to come out and just continue running the same type of success they had against Dallas that they had with Philly if 17 is not out there, because obviously he's one of their key players. You know, obviously that's something that we're going to have to monitor over the next week to see. Dallas is is going to have a time keying on Aaron Jones. Jamal Williams conceivably is not going to play. I mean, he went to the hospital. He had a concussion. You know, they had a couple extra days, so there's a possibility that he could be out there. I mean, we've seen guys come back and play with less time off after getting concussed, but you have to assume that Williams is not going to be out there. And unless they plan on adding a running back that I'm not aware of, then Dexter Williams is going to get some action. Is he ready? So there's just some things that you have to be mindful of when you look at the situation in terms of the offense and what to expect. But probably going to be another week where the defense, which is a little, is also banged up, but probably a little bit healthier than the offense, is probably going to have to step up and do the same thing they did the first 3 weeks, which is take over the show and try and help this team get a win.
Yeah, I think that's something that's getting undersold a little bit, was you brought up the Davante Adams injury. The Packers are trailing 34-27 when Adams exits the game before their first goal line sequence. With he exits the turf toe, he's unable to come back in the game. So much late in the game is less about what plays are called and what players they're called for. And what I mean by that is I've often said one of the best things about the Patriots is they don't get too cute late in the game. Last year in the AFC Championship game against the Chiefs, they're in overtime. They have three big third downs they need to convert. Where do they go? Two plays are designed for Julian Edelman. One play is designed for Rob Gronkowski. Who are their two best players? Well, there you go, Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski. Your money downs come down to your money players. And the Packers didn't have their money player. Now, this leads to another discussion, and it's been talked about a lot on Twitter now that Adams has been hurt, but it's the discussion of, and I've said it too, and I said it this offseason when we did our shows, Jason, it was, I can't believe that the front office did not have a discussion that said, what if Adams gets hurt? And I'm really struggling if the answer to what if Adams is hurt is, oh, we're good. Because I don't think they are. Geronimo Allison has basically been all or negative. That's really the best way to put it. He's either scoring touchdowns and making big plays, and to his credit, he made some big plays on Thursday night, but then he disappears. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, kind of the same way. He has some abilities, but he's not consistent enough yet, and that's the last thing that comes. Jimmy Graham is going to be relied on more. For better or worse, it appears that Rodgers trusts him as that veteran in the room. Mercedes Lewis, Robert Tonyan. It's kind of a total team effort that's going to be required to replace Davante Adams. And now I know I've seen a lot of people saying, well, they have to make a move for a receiver if Adams is going to be gone for a significant period of time. Guys, that move was one that needed to be made in March through July. Because at this point, I don't know who you're – like, if the Packers are adding to the receiving corps at the trade deadline, it's different if that player has to be someone to complement Davante Adams, as opposed to now where he would have to be the replacement for Davante Adams. Teams aren't trading guys like Julio Jones or DeAndre Hopkins or Michael Thomas or name your great receivers. If the Packers are adding a wide receiver to this team, it's somebody who's more of a complementary piece. Emmanuel Sanders is a popular name that gets thrown out. I think someone like that is a good example. Is Emmanuel Sanders a star? No. Is he a good enough player to be a compliment on a team that needs one? Yes, he is. But if Adams is down for the count for a while, then that's not going to be a positive thing. And that's not something that they can do. So I would kind of put your hopes of trading to bed for a while. And I think that there's just not enough guys there to get Green Bay where they need to go. So at the end of the day, that's kind of what it comes down to on the offense. Jason, the concern really is on the defensive side of the ball, and that's because for the first time they got gashed, and it happens to be against the first offense, the first real offense, I would tell you, that they faced. Chicago, we know their quarterback stinks. Kirk Cousins, same thing. Joe Flacco, he's not that great, obviously. And then Carson Wentz is a MVP-level player. The Eagles have some really good personnel on their team. Something similar. They're like a poor man's version. Ertz and Dallas Goedert is a less proven version of what the Patriots used to be able to do with Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski. And like I said, a lesser version of what they used to be able to do. But I think that was a big key to the Eagles the other night. But, Jason, the big story that comes out of this is the run defense. Jordan Howard, Miles Sanders, they really did whatever they wanted. Jordan Howard had a huge game with 3 touchdowns. And really, the Packers just weren't able to stop him. I mean, it felt like Mike Pettine has done a pretty good job for sacrificing run defense to defend a pass. And the Packers still did a pretty good job in the passing game the other night. They didn't have the pressure and the sacks and the turnovers that they usually had. But the Eagles, I think they said, I believe it was Jack Lepper tweeted, it was either him or Zach Cruz, somebody from the Packers wire tweeted that the Eagles averaged less than 6 yards per pass play. Hard to win in this league that way, but you can't get beaten over the head in the running game like they did. You can afford to lose some stuff in the run game like they did against the Broncos, for example, and still survive, whereas they're not able to do that if they're getting clubbed in the running game to where they can't stop anything. And the Eagles are just lining up, and it's 2nd and 3, 2nd and 2 every other play because they can't make any plays, and they're getting blocked on a lot of inside stuff. So I believe it was the legendary Ron Zook that once said, it's not a problem until it becomes a problem, and then it's a big problem. Well, Jason, at this point, they gave up almost 200 yards rushing, and they happen to be facing the best running back in the NFL next week, in Ezekiel Elliott. Is it a problem?
Okay, well, the first sign that we have an issue here is that the newest Packers fan is obviously expressing her opinion in the background there, and that would be Blake Westendorf, everybody. She was very disappointed by what she saw from the Packers on Thursday night. And so she is an honorary part of this show. And so she actually absolutely knows what she's talking about. I mean, if you're giving up a lot of, you know, if you're giving up a lot of yards on the ground via the pass, you know, warts tend to kind of be consistent. It's hard to fix them when you're using the same players, unless you've just got this extraordinary coaching staff that, you know, can make magic happen out of players that are what they are. And that's just, it's very common in any other industry too, in the, you know, the corporate world. Somebody's talents are what they are, their strengths are what they are, their weaknesses are what they are. The problem was the Packers didn't force any turnovers, and they had been getting turnovers the first 3 games. And again, 2 first-and-goal situations, you don't get in the end zone. Those are the kind of things that are going to get you beat. Now, this was, you know, like you said, Jake, this is a good offense that the Packers defense faced. And so, you know, they weren't able to hold them under 20 points like they had the first 3 weeks. And they actually had to score over 30 to get a win. Or they had to, they were going to have to score at least 28 to get a victory, which is not something that the, you know, that the Packers have had to do. So, you know, it's definitely going to be an issue. Dallas is, it's on tape. Everything that happens is on film. So Dallas is going to have their opportunities there. It's going to come down to, and the key is, and I don't know if we're transitioning here into the Dallas game, but the key to this one already, I can tell you, is going to be the way the Packers defense plays. I don't care what the offense does or doesn't do. If the defense can keep it close and they can keep Dallas, you know, out of the end zone or limit them to no more than 2 touchdowns on the day, which is a lot to ask because they've got talented pass catchers. And I know it's a new era. This is a totally different team. But Jason Witten is still a thing. And the Packers are facing the Cowboys. And Jason Witten should not be torching anybody. But somehow the Packers tend to kind of let the obvious things beat them and take care of everything else around them. And your game plan should actually be the opposite. It should be to take care of all of the obvious things and let some of the role players have to step up and have better than average games in order to beat you. So Amari Cooper is going to be an issue. We're going to see Randall Cobb on the opposing sideline for once, and all of the times that he's come through and made critical catches for the Packers offense over the past 8 seasons, he's now going to be doing that for the other side. And so we will, you know, potentially get to experience how deflating and frustrating that is up live and personal and close. Then the offensive line, I mentioned Brian Bulaga might not play in this game. If he's not able to go, then you've got more shuffling on the offensive line. How does that affect the run game for the Packers? So, but as far as defense goes, I mean, you know, it's, they have come into this building and they have faced Ezekiel Elliott several times and they have emerged victorious. So it can be done. These are different Packers teams. It's been a while since they played in Dallas. In fact, The interesting thing is it was this very same weekend 2 years ago that the Packers finished out a miraculous comeback win in the fourth quarter with a touchdown pass from Rodgers to Devontae Adams. And then the following week they went to Minnesota, and we all know what happened there. And ever since then, things have been very different in Green Bay. So it was almost 2 years to the day since they faced the Cowboys. They'll be back in Dallas doing it. And it's going to come down to how the Packers defense plays. And that's the simple key of it all. But at this point right now, I'm not confident that they're going to be able to stop Zeke Elliott. So they're going to have to force some turnovers. If they don't touch Dak Prescott and they don't get any turnovers, the Packers were fortunate to still be in the game against Philadelphia and have a chance to tie it at the end. If they don't get any pressure on Prescott or force turnovers against the Cowboys, they're going to end up losing, and it's going to be a rather lopsided loss, I think.
Yeah, it can be done. You know, we're watching the game now, and the Saints and the Cowboys are playing, and the Cowboys have only scored 3 points. It's a team who went up and down the field for the first 3 weeks of the season. Granted, they played the Giants, the Redskins, and the Dolphins, so some of the worst teams in the NFL and some of the worst defenses in the NFL. So maybe a little bit more of a reality check here for the Cowboys. That all remains to be seen, how that's going to go. As for specifics on the Cowboys, I think you nailed it right on the head. I mean, the big thing is to find their best players and take them away. Zeke Elliott is still, even with the emergence of Prescott this season, who coming into this game, I mean, granted, it's the third game of the season. It's hard to say, but Prescott is a MVP kind of candidate through 3 games. So that's the kind of season he's been having. Now, that can change very quickly, and I think that you're right from the standpoint of, I think the Packers, whether Adams plays or not, will get a couple plays against Dallas. I just think there's a few plays out there to be had. Now, I'm not saying they're going to score 40 on them, but I think they can. The other thing you hit on is I know the Adams injury is significant because of what's left out there. That being said, the bigger injury from Thursday night was Brian Bulaga. And with all due respect to Alex Light, he's a nice story, he's an undrafted free agent. That looked like JV against varsity on Thursday night against the Eagles. He did not look like somebody that was ready for prime time. And now he has Cowboys coming in who have DeMarcus Lawrence and a lot of good interior players. There are some guys that he's going to have to block if Bulaga can't go. So the hope is that Bulaga can go and at least solidify this offensive line, which, frankly, outside of Light in the second half, has played really well the last 2 weeks. Rodgers has been relatively clean. The only time that they seem to struggle in protection is when they run plays that inexplicably ask tight ends to block defensive ends. That very well could have cost the Packers a 75-yard touchdown the other night to Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Mercedes Lewis can't hold a block on Derek Barnett, and he should never be asked to, but he was, and Barnett strips Rodgers, and Rodgers had a chance for a big one down the field. So that's unfortunate that it worked out that way, but ultimately what it came down to is the Packers had a chance to win the game, and they didn't. And now we're going to move forward because I think this is where you're going to learn what kind of head coach Matt LaFleur is. It's very easy, and I shouldn't say easy, but it's easier when everything's going well for the coach to feel like he's all in control and the players feel like the coach is in control. What you learn from a coach is what do you do when adversity strikes? Are you upfront and honest? Are you able to bounce back? Are you able to do all those things? Or do you sit and sulk and not adjust anything over the next week? Because there's a long way to go in the season yet, and 3-0 was great. 3-1 doesn't have to mean the end of the year either. But there's a stretch coming up where that fast start we were talking about, Jason, 3-1 is great. And I think that any of us, as we talked about the first quarter of the season, would have said 3-1, I'll take that in a heartbeat. That being said, they've got a road game in Dallas, 2 home games against Detroit on Monday Night Football, and a game against Oakland before having to face the Chargers and the Chiefs and the 49ers and some teams like that down the stretch. And then you've got those three division games at the end of the year where the Bears defense, I think there was a lot of exaggeration on just how much Chuck Pagano being the D coordinator was going to affect them. They look just as nasty as they always have been in the last couple of years. Minnesota at U.S. Bank Stadium is a different animal, even though I think that we can put to bed the idea that Kirk Cousins isn't anything special. The Minnesota Vikings have paid $84 million guaranteed to a quarterback they are terrified to put the ball in the hands of and that his receivers hate. Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen are both taking shots at Cousins, essentially, without fully saying his name, but they're pretty much taking shots at him after the game. The Minnesota Vikings are a gift that never ceases to give. So, that being said, in that stadium with that defense, that does make them a little bit tougher. Dalvin Cook is a great player. And then you've got Detroit, who Detroit was a couple plays away, as they always seem to be, but they were a couple plays away from beating Kansas City and Detroit today. So, it's an interesting stretch down there, but the Packers really need to – 3-0 was great, like I mentioned, but they can't afford to fall to 3-3, 4-3. You know, they need to win, I would say, two of these next three games for sure. Maybe that means you lose in Dallas and win your home games, but I really think that of these next three, they've got to come away with 2 of 3 if they're going to win this division and get into the playoffs. There's something else I think we've learned this weekend, Jason, is that the NFC is wide open. All the teams look like they have some fatal flaws. And we just saw the Eagles. That's a contender. The Cowboys are struggling to score tonight against New Orleans. New Orleans doesn't have Drew Brees. Seattle, okay. The Rams got torched by Tampa Bay on offense today. There's a lot of opportunity here if Packers are going to be able to see this. Now, that starts next weekend in Dallas because they have to bounce back. And I think that they have to bounce back in a relatively big way. Now, I don't know if that means they're going to win the game, but I would at least like to see the difference of don't let Philadelphia be the reason you lose to Dallas. So looking ahead, Jason, what do you think, what are you looking for from this new era, this new head coach this week specifically against the Dallas Cowboys?
Well, I think you hit the nail right on the head, which is how does he adjust? How is he going to get his team ready to play a game? Now, one thing I can tell you is that in years past, I'd be concerned about that because I'd seen the team come out flat after losing and put together some tough stretches during seasons where they've had to overcome losing a couple games because they just hung their head and just didn't want to adapt to what was going on around them. I don't think that this season's Packers team is that at all. I don't think that's their MO. I don't think that's what Matt LaFleur is all about. And so I'm not worried about the effort that he's going to put in to try to get his team ready. But they have to come out and do it. They have to come out ready to play. And it's not just the head coach, but you've also got a quarterback that's got to engineer the offense and be ready to go. You've got a defense that, you know, how do the Smith brothers come back after being completely goose-egged? They said all the right things, and they said it's just a bump in the road. And that's, you know, obviously you don't want your captains and your veteran players to say, okay, we're screwed. We lost the game. It's over. You want them to, you know, you want them to be up to the challenge. And I think that they will be, but Dallas is a good team. I mean, this is just, you know, it's a tough schedule this season. The Packers just drew a tough card, which is interesting because they finished third. So, you know, I don't know what to expect. You know, I mean, they may run up against the same type of situation where they're just a couple plays short against Dallas because Dallas is just really good this season. You know, you mentioned there might be one of the best teams in the NFC, and I think there's a good case to be made for that. You know, as much as it pains me to say because I've lived through a lot of those good Dallas teams in the 90s that I wanted to strangle because they ruined and ended a lot of seasons for my Packers. And they also had a reputation that I really wasn't necessarily a huge fan of, and I'm not a big fan of the approach that some of those teams took. So, but, you know, that's the other thing, too. And, Jake, this isn't part of the script, but, you know, I do want you to chime in on it because I wrote about it. I tweeted about it a lot, and I wrote about it a little bit on She Said TV. But you look at the last several Super Bowl winners, many of which have been the Patriots. I get that, and they are who they are. But outside of New England, you've got the Philadelphia Eagles, who the Packers just faced. So you had Derek Barnett, who levels Jamal Williams, who's being stood up. He gets flagged, but he's not going to be suspended. He doesn't get thrown out of the game. And then he strip sacks. He makes a strip sack play on Aaron Rodgers. They won the Super Bowl 2 years ago against the Patriots. The Patriots play up to the level of the up to the limit of the rules and sometimes beyond. And the 2015 Denver Broncos were all about that defense with Aqib Talib and Von Miller. And those guys were scrappy, and Chris Harris, and those guys were scrappy and talked a lot of trash and played up to the limit of the rules. And they probably took the approach of, look, they can't call everything, so play hard. Now, I got lambasted a little bit on Twitter because some thought that I was trying to say that the Packers should play dirty, they should headhunt, and they should just play scrappy and disregard the rules. That's not what I'm saying. But you just got punched in the mouth at home. So you better come back ready to play, and you better come back and be physical and make sure that you set the standard early in this Dallas game that you're not going to be pushed around. You're going to be the aggressors. You're going to set the pace of the game. Listen, it may not happen. Dallas might still be better that day. But if you're going to be a championship team, you can't get goose-egged on defense or offense or special teams. You've got to bring it every single week. The elite teams, the teams that win the Super Bowl, are teams that don't leave one aspect of their game on the plane. They bring it every single week, and they're on the field, and you know that they're there. Jake, is there any stock to be put into that? Because obviously a lot of that stuff is mental, but I do think there's some carryover to the field that is there to be had.
Well, first of all, I know that this opinion is not entirely popular. I don't think Derek Barnett should have been ejected from Thursday night's game. I think that's a slippery slope you guys want to trend toward. Everybody's on Twitter screaming about how we need to start ejecting these guys for helmet-to-helmet hits. And you know what? What I think will end up happening is if they institute a targeting-type rule like they have in college, somebody will get ejected that didn't deserve to be ejected. And now, I mean, I know for every play like that, there's one like Vontaze Burfict, who, I mean, this guy's got a reputation, and he leads the league in helmet-to-helmet hits since God knows when. It's been ridiculous with that guy specifically. But I don't think Barnett should have been ejected. I think the hit was unnecessary. But at the same time, I mean, football really is unnecessary roughness. That's kind of the nature of the game. Now, that's not saying that the play wasn't dirty, but, you know, a 15-yard penalty, and the coach sat him out after a while, and I think he'll get fined for that. And I just don't think it was an ejectionable offense. He didn't lead with the crown of his helmet. I mean, he hit him helmet to helmet, but it wasn't like he led down there with the intention to, like, launch himself. It wasn't – the play that I kept seeing as an example was Danny Trevathan a few years ago on Thursday Night Football against the Bears, and I feel like that was very different. Trevathan head first launched himself into Devontae Adams. I don't think Barnett did that, but that's – not what you asked me. What you did ask me was, let's see how I feel the Packers should be playing. It's something I think the attitude was established through the first 3 weeks of the season. You know, there was a bit of a new idea, a new identity forming in Green Bay, and something that will humble you very quickly. I know the NFL has changed. I know the passing game is far more sophisticated than it used to be. It's far more emphasized. I know running the ball is a lot less important than it used to be. That being said, there's nothing more humbling to a team than getting their ass kicked in the trenches the way that they did last week, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You want to humble a team? Beat them up front. And that's what the Eagles did, and that's something the Cowboys try and do. You mentioned those Cowboys teams of the 90s, Jason, something that they had, and I know they had a lot of flash and dash, but really the reason they were as good as they were is that Great Wall of Dallas. And they were nasty. They just humbled you, beat you, and leaned on you in the trenches until the very end of the game. And that's why they were so good for so long, is they were able to do things like that. Not just in the running game either, like the passing game was able to do that as well. And it's really frustrating for run defenders when they can't get off blocks, and it feels like they're giving up 7 yards to carry. And then when they finally throw the ball, your passing game, your pass rushers can't get after the quarterback. That is demoralizing for a defense. So I think that I think, you know, like you said, I knew what you were trying to convey. You didn't want the, you don't want the Packers to play dirty, but I don't have a problem with a little bit of an edge. Something that my friend, former Pack-A-Day co-host, Owen Reese, and I talked about once is, you know, we kind of joked that there's a lot of football fans that don't like football because, and I say that because I think there's a lot of plays that people are calling dirty that aren't dirty. Now, the Derek Barnett play is not an example there, but the Anthony Barr play on Aaron Rodgers, that's not a dirty play. 20 years ago, they just called that football. I think it should be just called football now. And I can promise you, and I've said this a million times on this show, that if it was reversed and that was Kirk Cousins being hit by Clay Matthews, we would be saying, oh, no, not a dirty hit. That's his job. His job is to hit the quarterback. We're just upset. I think there's a lot of result-based outrage. And the NFL is as reactionary to it as anybody. They changed rules because Tom Brady gets hit, misses an entire season. Aaron Rodgers gets hit, broken collarbone. He's gone for a while. I think that's what happens, and a lot of fans get that way too. And, yes, it sucks that player XYZ gets hurt on a given play. But that doesn't mean that a play was dirty. That said, an edge to the Packers' defense, that's something that they've missed for a really long time, and that's something I would really like to see return to this team. So that's what I think at this point for what your question was. But real quick, let's get game predictions, and then we'll kind of go with a macro view of the NFL since it's the quarter pole of the season as soon as the Cowboys and Saints came in. Jason, just real quick, a couple quick sentences. Who wins this game in Dallas and why?
So I don't think the Packers are quite there. I think the injuries and just the situation is not bode well for them. So I don't know how close it's going to be or how not close it's going to be, but the Packers will probably fall short. It's a road game. I predicted them to lose this game in the season preview show. I changed my prediction last week, even though I predicted a loss against the Eagles, and that did not work out well for me. So I'm going to stick with my initial thought, which is I don't think they get a win here. You know, hopefully they can get out of it healthy and they play well and show well, but I don't think they pull it off, unfortunately. So two in a row, tough, but then, like you said, two at home, and they can come back and hopefully right the ship and get those next two.
Yeah, I like Dallas, too. This is a game I had Dallas winning on the schedule before I saw how everything played out. If Belaga can't – I mean, some of it does depend on the injury situation. If Belaga can't go, that's tough. If Adams can't go, I'm not sure who makes plays for them in the passing game. Defensively, I think they'll be able to hold their own. I don't think it'll be as bad as it was against Philadelphia, even though Zeke is a better player than Miles Sanders and Jordan Howard. I think that the Packers, this is a team with some pride to it now, and I think that they'll have 10 days to recover and hopefully get at least in a better position to do some things that way. So I'm really interested to watch Jaire Alexander face off against Amari Cooper. I'm really interested to see how they match up with Randall Cobb. I'm interested to see what the Packers do with a lot of things. I think this is a really interesting game. Ultimately, I'm interested to see how the Packers are able to respond to their first bit of adversity this season. So the next question I have, Jason, we're at the quarter pole of the season you mentioned. What do you think at this point, has there been a team that's established themselves as, I mean, other than the Patriots, I think the Patriots, everybody kind of knows what their deal is. They're great. They're 4-0. They beat the crappy teams. They beat good teams. They win when their quarterback plays like crap, which is what they did today against Buffalo. So we got that. Let's just look at the NFC, because I think the AFC, we can pretty much agree it's a two-horse race. It's New England and Kansas City. But in the NFC, is there a team you think at this point that has established themselves as a clear-cut favorite at this point in time?
Not in the NFC. The NFC is wide open. Wide open. Dallas right now, struggling to pull away from a Teddy Bridgewater-led New Orleans Saints offense. And I'm not saying Teddy's not a good quarterback, but that ain't Drew Brees out there. So the Cowboys can be beat. And if the Packers surprise us and make a fool out of me and prove me wrong, I hope they do. I won't be that surprised. Not that, and also the Packers have reversed their fortunes in Dallas from what I experienced 20 years ago. So the NFC is very winnable. It's week 4 right now. It'll be week 5 next week. There's really no reason to panic. think my feeling deflated after the game was over with was just the fact that Devontae Adams gets hurt. And it's just one of those things where football is a tough thing to follow as a fan because you know your team is going to lose some key players or they're going to have key guys missing at times that are going to affect the outcomes of some of their games. And it's just a tough thing to wrap your head around. You know, why do I invest myself emotionally and so much in these teams when I know that I'm going to get disappointed because they're not going to be at full strength and because it's a game that is very physical. But yeah, I think right now New England is New England, whatever. Although the way that they played today, Buffalo, you know, they didn't pull it off, but the Buffalo Bills have just been very inconsistent as a franchise for as long as they've been a team. But the Patriots can be defeated. They can be beaten. You know, they're getting it done, but they also have a very, very easy schedule. And it's the same song and dance with them every season. They have no competition in the AFC East, and that's who they play six of their 16 games against. And, you know, they just happen to draw some of these easier games on the schedule as well. And it's kind of the old same old song and dance, and it's tired and it's boring. The Chiefs look good. They found a way to get a win on the road against the Lions today. Detroit very easily could have won that game. The Chiefs made a couple of big defensive plays. Former Packer Breshad Breeland gets a big fumble return for 99 yards and a touchdown. They're going to be tough to beat. The Packers are going to see them in a couple weeks, and that's a game that, man, it would be – I can't tell you what it would do to a Packers team that's, you know, first-year head coach looking to get back on track and make a name for themselves. You go into Kansas City and you win on prime time there. I don't know what's going to happen between now and that game, but that's huge. But the NFC is wide open. It's there for the taking. So, you know, it's discouraging the Packers lose one at home, but they've got the entire season in front of them and a lot of good opportunities to right the ship. But they've got to take care of things in their division. You know, they beat the Vikings and the Bears already. They got to beat Detroit. I know it sounds weird for me to say that, but it's been two full seasons. They have not beat the Lions one time. So their first crack at them is going to be at home on Monday Night Football. The Lions have lost a game now. They're not undefeated. They're not this invincible, you know, crazy, you know, feeling of invincibility over them. Got to start with that. Win the game against your division rival, the Lions. Don't let yourself down against the Raiders, and then see what you can do after that point.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely no establishment of dominance. I mentioned if the Cowboys are able to win this game, I think it's fair at this point at least to say that they're probably the favorite, but that can change in the blink of an eye. Right now, they're beating the Saints 10-9 on the road. The Saints obviously playing without Drew Brees and playing with Teddy Bridgewater. Jason, you won't say that Teddy Bridgewater is not a good quarterback, but I will. If Teddy Bridgewater finishes out this season and New Orleans doesn't go to the Super Bowl, we'll be talking about him as the reason why they didn't win more. And that would be the case with the team's franchise quarterback, too, I think. He's as dink and dunk gets with any offense. And that was the case in Minnesota, too. So I know the Vikings replaced him with Kirk Cousins. Bridgewater is probably better than Cousins just because he doesn't have a really nasty turnovers like Cousins does, but it's not that big of a difference, I don't think. It's just the salary that would make the difference. But that's beside the point. The Chicago Bears, I think, are still a formidable foe, if nothing else, because they have the best defense in football. And I mentioned earlier that the reports of their demise because Chuck Pagano was their D coordinator were greatly exaggerated. They have a very good defense, and they have played very good all year long against four pretty good teams at least. I mean, you know, one was Joe Flacco and one was Kirk Cousins, but you got to make the plays against the people in front of you. So I think that's going to be a two-horse race. I think the NFC North, I just can't believe in the Lions. I know that maybe that's not fair in its past, but I can't believe in Detroit. I think that it's going to be Green Bay, Chicago, when it's all said and done at the end of the year, duking it out. I'm interested to see how Chicago is able to do without Mitch Trubisky. Did not matter today, but is something to keep an eye on moving forward. As far as disappointments, Atlanta's been disappointing. I can't believe. I just don't know how an offense that has Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley and Austin Hooper and Mohamed Sanu's not bad. I still don't know how they struggle as much as they do. But they do. Dan Quinn's probably going to get fired in the end of his run there in Atlanta. But outside of that, I think the 49ers, I didn't have that much optimism about them going into the year. But I do think that they've done very well to start the season. Obviously, they haven't been beaten yet. They have a pretty good defense. They have Jimmy Garoppolo, who's playing well, and Kyle Shanahan, who I have a lot of respect for as an offensive mind. So it's going to be interesting to see how the NFL, how the NFC shakes out. Because, yeah, Jason, I think we set up pretty well there. The AFC is a two-horse race. It'll be Kansas City. It'll be New England. Maybe Baltimore could be a team who beats somebody there. I don't know. I just don't see it with any of those teams. So I think it's those two in the NFC. Wide open. Green Bay's got an opportunity to do some really nice things that they can get into the playoffs. But I mean, that's a long way to go from here. There's a lot going on. Yeah, the Packers have a lot to accomplish. They'll start by playing a tough road game in Dallas, because that's something else, Jason, that we haven't talked about. They beat Chicago on the road, and that was a nice thing to see. And I don't want to sell this one short, but it's been a while since the Packers have won a road game against a formidable opponent that wasn't in their division, if that makes sense. So last year, obviously, 1-7 on the road. They won one game at the end there against the Jets. Big deal. This year, they started with a win in Chicago, and that's turning out to look like a really nice win. Chicago's still 3-1. They haven't lost since then. They'll probably go to 4-1 after playing Oakland and London next week. We'll see how all that goes, but I think it's been – that's a big win for Green Bay to have done what they did against Chicago. No one's first week of the season on stuff, but this Cowboys game is a chance to really, I think, make a statement of a new era. A new era, we have a new coach. We're not just pushovers on the road. We don't de-emphasize winning on the road. None of those things. It's a really good opportunity for them to assert themselves as a primary player in the NFC this year. So with that being said, you guys have noticed our third panelist. So that's going to do it for this show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packer news and podcasts. Follow the show on Twitter. It's at PackerPulse. We got a lot of new things coming. Potentially an introduction tomorrow. You guys can feel free, as of right this moment, to check out our YouTube channel. That'll be YouTube.com, obviously, for those of you that are into the streaming sorts of things. And the YouTube channel's name is – sorry, I'm getting, like, choked up and emotional about it, but it's Pulse of the Pack. So feel free to subscribe to Pulse of the Pack. Leave us reviews, leave us comments, all that stuff once we get rolling. I think it'd be a lot of fun. We got a lot of new stuff coming. We follow Jason on Twitter. He's at Jason Perrone. Got some good stuff coming from Cheesehead TV. Game Balls Land Calls. The Packers Periscope is every week. That's some good stuff. And you can follow me. I'm at Jacob Westendorf. I joked the other night, there used to be about 80% Packers stuff on my Twitter account. That's probably down to about 60% now, with the extra 20%, maybe more, I don't know, being taken up by baby stuff. So that's my life these days. And then you can find my work at Packer Report, at Packer Report 66. There's a Twitter handle for that. I have my stock report coming Tuesday. Every Friday I have keys to the game if they don't play on Thursday night. But it's been a lot of fun. I've got my Packer Report hat. It's been a nice little addition. Kudos to Ross Unlum for hooking us up with some really nice gear here. What a nice addition, as if I needed more Packers-related hats, T-shirts, stuff like that. But thank you, guys. Thank you for listening to the show. And as always, go Pack, go.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.